session number 11107, row 3.
Mr. Nutter, reel 3. We're talking about the retreat to Dunkirk, and you mentioned earlier on in the interview that, the refugees were a problem in some ways on the roads. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, they were a problem to us, and we were a problem to them, you see. They used to say that we attracted the dive bombers and put them in danger. That's the only, you know, they didn't welcome me joining them.
Can you remember any particular incidents where there was this sort of panic and hostility?
Well, only when the dive bombs came, Chris, everybody panicked. Well, I'd got into the whole way and all, you know.
What did you do when a dive bomber came?
Well, you just lay down under cover in a ditch anywhere if you could get out the way. Because the funny thing is, no entrance, you know, in France, it's all open. You'll have been, Chris, haven't you? It's all so odd places as avenues and big trees, but out in the country there was no hedgerows much.
Were there frequent raids, dive bomber
raids? Well, pretty decent, yes. Pretty frequent, I mean. Yes.
Did the refugees slow down the movement of
the refugee
vehicles?
Yes. They got in there. We were showing barrows and carts and broken down my hospital car, because there's no petrol.
Was there any effort made to clear them off the road?
No, nobody, no. No. You just went past them if you could. That's where you could.
When you took to, you burnt the vehicles, were you responsible for burning the vehicle you were in? Is that someone else's
job? It was the driver's responsibility.
After you'd done that and you took to marching, what sort of kit did you have with you?
Right, we just had old sidearms. You hadn't had any big kit. All that was on trucks, you say, and it got lost. We had to be fully out equipped when we were made up again to Oakhampton.
I see. So you're marching comparatively light?
Yes.
And you said you marched at night?
Yeah, if we could, yes. We did day marching and all, eh, but nighttime was...
You said if we could.
Yes.
What prevented you sometimes marching at night?
Well, I don't know, but sometimes we march down the day, you say, but I think if we could, it was night for safety.
When you marched, was it a very orderly march, or was it just...
just a rabble, you know. Some of the lads, if they get a bike, they've got a bike, and... There's one lad riding a horse. Jerry Robson.
Were you always on foot?
Yes.
Did you march on your own, or were you with some friends?
Oh, the three of us stuck together all the time.
You were all three, were you Batman?
Yes.
I see. What were their names?
Jackie Cheeseman, he's still alive, he's 85. But the other one was John Duncan, got killed after D-Day, John, when he went back.
And were you together when you reached the coast?
Yes. We wouldn't leave Jackie because he couldn't swim, you say. We could, but we wouldn't leave Jackie. So we stayed with Jack.
Can you describe what the scene was like as you approached Dunkirk?
Why, we went up the main street to the pan, and all our heavy artillery was there with the breaches took out, like. And then we branched off across the sand dunes, just on the beach. Those Frenchmen, all sorts there, just sitting waiting to be took off. And while they were getting drawn, when the ship came in, you see, two sailors brought a boat out and filled it with soldiers and took them out, but two soldiers had to bring it back, you see, to get it refilled. And they were getting sideways on and the boat was getting capsized, some of them, you know, inexperienced. That's why Jackie wouldn't go out. He couldn't swim.
Was there any evidence of panic amongst those?
No, no panic, very hardly.
Was it organised by officers at this point?
There was officers there, yes.
And they were taking the...
Yes, they were making them... Well, there was a big column waiting aboard, you see. But we wouldn't join the column on account of Jackie not being able to swim. But word came down 6 o'clock on the morning that there was a ship in at Dunkirk Pier. So we walked down there as hospital ship in as well. And they were getting big men, you know, to carry a stretcher. When we being small, I just carried the rifles. And they put the stretchers on the hospital ship, then we joined this big ship called the Malines.
I see, these ships were actually in the harbour at Dunkirk.
It was at the end of the pier.
How long had you been on the beach at La Panne and Dunkirk?
About 3 years.
Had there been much enemy activity at that point?
Dive bombers and shrapnel, you know, shelling.
How frequent was this?
Why? 3 or 4 times a day. To give an instance of the shrapnel, we were sitting on the beach and 2 French soldiers went past. And when the shrapnel came, they both flopped on the bottom, you know. But only one got up, a lump of shrapnel had gone under his stained helmet through his brow. And his friend just took his dog tags off and walked away and left them. That was the shrapnel, you know.
These were shrapnel shells, were they?
Shrapnel shells. They would break open and fly all over.
Was there any attempt to take cover? Or any way
No cover, Chris. Just sit on the sand dunes.
Did people try to dig into the sand?
You tried, though. Make a bit shallow hole if you could.
Did you do that yourself?
No, just sat.
No. What were your feelings at this point?
Well, a little bit apprehensive. Thought the worst.
Were you afraid that you might be killed at this point?
Yes, definitely, yeah. There was always that possibility, Chris. And nobody likes to die. Life's sweet, isn't it?
Was there any way you could pass the time, because you were on that beach for 3 days?
I was one officer trying to get us up doing blinking arms drill.
Tried to get you to do arms drill?
On the beach.
Was that a DLI officer?
He was an ANZAC officer, but he was attached to the DLI. He was an ANZAC.
And what was he?
I forget his name, because he wasn't with us a long time, you see. I just knew them that was when I worked in the mess.
Did he get many people to actually do the drill?
No. Them that was near a storm, the others fiddled away. But conveniently lost. Ooh, it was stupid. Arms drill. He said it was good for morale.
Were there any other instances where officers tried to organise the men in that way?
No. That was only one I saw.
Was there any rations given out?
No.
What food did you have?
None.
None at all?
No.
What about water?
I had no water, but I got a drink off a Frenchman out of his water bottle. I was thirsty. I asked him if he had any water. I guess maybe I didn't. But so I got a drink of his water.
Was there any way that you could actually go and get any food or water?
Not when we were onto the beach. Oh, no. No, there was no water laid there. You would have to have gone back into town, into La Panne.
Did you see any evidence of perhaps people who had food sharing it out? Or?
No.
Everyone in the same position, you think?
Seemed to be, yes.
Can you tell me about the actual boarding of this ship and what the conditions were like on the boat as you sailed out?
Well, we had a very uneventful journey. Unmolested, there were some of the ships getting bombed as they were leaving the harbour, but whether they respected the hospital ship or what, I don't know, Chris, but we went out with it.
You weren't actually on the hospital
no,
ship?
No, we were on the Malines. And... We had a very unmolested. And as I say, they had a big boiler going, giving us tea and bully beef. And then that's where we pulled into Folkestone about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And from there, we travelled across. We got a car. That car I got off you, that was handed in Ashford on Kent. Ashford in Kent, you know. To write and let the people know that you'd arrived. And we finished up in Chidworth Arena.
Before we get on to what happened after you'd arrived in England, can you tell me a little bit about what conditions were like on board the Malahides?
Well, they were good, yes. Good conditions. It was pretty overcrowded, like. You know, but everything was all right.
Where were the men placed?
Well, there was a lot on deck and there was some down below.
Was it a very large ship?
Yes, it was a big, one of them big ferry. It was the SS Malines.
Was it a channel ferry?
Yes. Yes. And as I tell you, it was broke up at Wall's End. They found 6 corpses down in the hold. I can remember reading about it.
When was this?
After the war. And I still see it must have been 6 of the chaps getting down, getting overcome with wheel fumes.
Were you down below?
No, I was on deck all the time.
And were you trapped? Was this boat sailing during the day or at night?
Oh, daytime, yes. I say it was 4 o'clock daytime when we pulled into Folkestone.
Okay, and from Folkestone you got this car.
And trained. We were into trains. Uh-huh. And we went across country, and that was the first stop, Ashford. There was civilians there and food in it, you know, to here and cigarettes. And then from there we finished up in Chidworth itself, in the arena. We were built in the arena where they also had the tattoos.
What were your reactions to what had happened?
No reactions to that I can think of, Chris.
Did you feel at all that the war had been lost?
Well, everybody thought it had been lost.
Did you hear any stories about the DLI at this point? Have you any idea what had happened to the DLI men?
No, well, after Chidworth, you know, we all went to Launceston and Oakhampton. That's where we were reformed there. Mm-hmm. All the Durhams that was available, you know, you had to go there.
So when you were at Launceston, did you hear any stories about the Durhams and the action they'd been
no,
in?
No, just that the C Company got the worst. It practically got wiped out, C Company. I'd love to say.
Do you hear any other stories about the 10th Battalion?
No. Because after that they went to Iceland, you say, well, I didn't go up there with them.
Did you hear anything about your officer, Officer Gill, the man that you've been Batman for?
Oh, we joined up again at Oakhampton till Captain Hutchison came back and claimed us. Yes.
I see. Now, Captain Hutchison was the adjutant.
He was till we went to France.
Yes, that's right.
He didn't go to France as the adjutant.
No. Was he the adjutant again when you met him at Oakhampton?
Shortly after we met, it was when he got this job.
What job is that?
In charge of the CMP traffic control on Salisbury Plain.
This was Captain Hutchison?
Captain Hutchison. I think he finished as a major after I left him.
Uh-huh. And how did that affect you? When Captain Hutchison got the job of traffic control?
Well, I had to go with him. Yes, and he got a house down there. He exchanged houses with a chap. He was RTO at Newcastle Station. And he had a house at Staindrop. Captain Hutchison had a house at Staindrop, and this one had a house just outside Salisbury. And they exchanged houses.
So Captain Hutchison, in effect, moved down
That's
to
right.
Salisbury?
Yes, and this officer and his family took the Staindrop house, you see, so he could travel.
I see. Now, did you then move into that house?
Yes, I moved. The only time I went to the. Unless they were pushed, you know, if they had a lot of convoys. I'll go out there, but apart from that, I I just set the garden for them and looked after his gear, you know. And I also pressed his shields and that and everything at the house. But when they were busy, I also go out on point duty as well.
So can you explain what the role of this unit was that you joined?
Well, it was when they took all the signposts down, you see, to baffle if there was any parachutists dropped. They wouldn't know where they were. And we also get the insignia of the convoy, the markings on the truck, and the number, you know. And they dropped them on at each crossroads, and you'll put them on the right road all the way to where they wanted to be. There'll be another chap on the next crossroads, you see, and he'll put them farther on.
And did you operate throughout the country or just in the Salisbury
area? I was up here as well. Oh, it was up the north.
You were as well?
Then? No, I was on Salisbury Plain till I finished. But there was CMP's traffic control up here.
Yes, did the traffic control that Captain Hutchinson was in charge of, was that just in the Salisbury area?
Just the Salisbury area, yes.
Yes. Now, at this point, you remained in the DLI, is that correct? But you were not any more attached to them?
No, I was. You always kept your DLI number, you see. But I had nothing to do with the DLI after that.
And how long did you do this job for, this posting?
Till August 1942, and I got out to go at the mines.
I see. And when did you move to Salisbury?
Well, July 1940.
July 1940?
Yeah.
I see.
That's where that photograph was taken, Salisbury.
I see. And you said you moved out to work in the mines.
Yeah.
Did you have any choice in this?
I had a choice. I was sick of being on Salisbury Plain, so I took it.
Why were you sick of being on
Salisbury
Plain?
It was boring by the same thing, day in, day out, day in, day out. There was no change. I think they were just waiting the invasion. It was monotonous. So when I got the chance, I took the chance and came out.
Did you think that working down the mines was perhaps a more useful occupation?
I think that's how they looked at it. It's not like you say, we were doing nothing where we were at. Just putting people there, like convoys through.
Were you given any encouragement to go to move out of the army and go to the mines?
No, I just left your own discretion. You could please yourself. There was no pushing, shoving or nothing.
Can you describe the process you had to go to leave the army?
I just got word that the officer wanted to see us. Then when I went, he said they'd get word they wanted miners to go back to the pit, you know. Would I like to go? So I said yes, and that was it.
Could you briefly tell me about the working conditions in the pit? Have there been any change since the war had started?
No, it was just still the same.
Were the pay and conditions of work the same?
Yeah, yes. The conditions was just the same. I think we got better paid than when I'd been called up.
Would you say you were better off as a miner than a soldier in terms of pay?
Wondering you were, yes. Well, you only had a shilling a day, you know. Some days you only had 5 shilling. Those barrack room damages kept off, and a shilling for something else. And 5 shilling didn't go far. You had your soap and razor blades and everything you could buy out of that. Stamps. If you were writing home.
What about food and those sort of things?
Well, the food was provided. It was all right.
Yes.
Mind, when we were under canvas at Warminster, we also go to the barracks belonging to the tank corps. But it was well. We hadn't seen anything like it. Tablecloths on the tables and flowers. And you got your own mug and shoved it under there. Not like a Dixie like we did in the Durhams.
What did you think of that?
That was great.
Yes, you haven't mentioned Warminster. When were you at Warminster?
That's when we were reformed into the MCMPs.
When you were reforming?
To make this CMP company up, you know, the traffic control.
I see, yes. And then you
moved. That's where we did the training for it there, you see. Point you out in that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Nutter.
Okay, Chris.